Welcome to the Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm your host, Pamela Muldoon. Excited for another couple of hours to spend with you today on Business 1570 and just getting in the mood there of a little Mellencamp in small town. You know, I was driving here today and thinking about just some of the music I choose for my show because it's a big part of my personal life. And, you know, I am one of the reasons I'm doing this show is to really provide some quality resources for my small business community. I'm a small business owner, my company, Next Stage Business, a marketing consulting firm here in the Twin Cities. And I really do believe this with all my heart, that it's a collaboration of small business owners that's going to turn this economy around. So I'm really excited to bring you Next Stage Business Radio Show, and my hope is that you are getting not only value, but also some tips, information, maybe even a dose of inspiration in your time with us as we spend the afternoon together. So again, here we're here from 1 to 3 on Saturdays, and just for my folks out there, because social media is a big part of my life, a part of my marketing world, in my business, I want to make sure and remind my Twitterers, say that fast three times, Twitterers, that the hashtag for the show is hashtag NSB Radio. So if you are tweeting today, which we greatly appreciate, please add that to your tweets and make sure that you spread the word. And, of course, our Twitter handle is NSB Radio Show. We're also on Facebook if you happen to be out there as well. We do have a Facebook fan page. Just look for Next Stage Business Radio Show as well. And we'd love to be a part of your social media world as well. We have a jam-packed show for you today, and I'm just going to give you kind of a rundown of what to expect. And if you're also in and out of your car, don't worry about it, because you can also live stream us on the internet, nextstagebusinessradio.com. So this is a big shout out for all my friends all over the state of Minnesota, possibly around the country, and maybe even globally listening today. How cool is that? It's amazing what we can do in 2010. But we have a really jam-packed show. First up is our segment, our team of advisors segment. And, you know, I just love that I can bring this to you every week. And today is a topic that we're going to discuss. It's close to my heart because it's very close to the needs in my business, and that's intellectual property. So we have a couple of gentlemen here from Mansfield, Tannick & Co., and we're going to get to them in just a minute to talk more about intellectual property online, offline, patents, trademarks, copyrights. We're going to do as much as we can. We're actually fulfilling most of our first hour with this conversation. It's one I think is so important in today's business market. We also have coming up in our second hour, I always like to bring that organization of the week to you, an organization, a group, an association that supports the business community. We have President Bruce Newstead on deck from the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, located in Plymouth, but of course they are all over the big section of the West Metro in terms of supporting business, but they support businesses all over the Twin Cities. And in our Leaders and Teachers segment, I'm really excited. A very good friend of mine, super guy, Steve Weiss, is here from Cast Screw Machine. We're going to have a very interesting conversation today. We're not only going to talk about Steve, his career, his time with Cast Screw Machine, the leadership that he brings to the table for that company, but this is a manufacturing company, and friends, we all know that that industry has taken a big hit over the last year and a half. So we're going to talk about the manufacturing industry, a little bit of the history, some trends, and get some advice from Steve today. So if you're ready, I'm ready, guys. And looking here at my two friends in studio. So I'm going to introduce them, and then I'm also going to let them give a chance to talk a little bit about themselves as we dive into intellectual property. So team of advisors today. Hello, Jeff O'Brien. How are
Hello.
You?
I'm doing well.
Jeff is, of course, now a staple on the show. Been here. Gosh, we're already rounding out our first month. This is our fourth show.
Right.
This
right.
is awesome. Mm-hmm. Great. So Jeff O'Brien from Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen, business attorney. That is really the staple of our advisory team. You have brought one of your fellow attorneys from Mansfield, Tannick today, Mr. Gregory Perleberg. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. We're so glad that you could join us, Greg, because Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen really has diversified their attorney offerings, right? And one of those offerings that you bring to the table is intellectual property. Is that correct, Greg?
That's true. My practice focuses largely on areas involving technology, e-commerce, things like trademarks, copyrights, entertainment law issues, complex contracts, all the things that we tell our clients help them make money and make using a lawyer useful.
And so you're dealing with those creative types.
That's right. Some of the best clients in the world. Absolutely.
And we appreciate that, because I'm a highly right-brain creative type, and I totally get it. So we definitely want to dive into more of that. But before we do, Greg, give us a little bit of a background. How long have you been doing this particular field of attorney work?
Well, I hate to age myself, but I came out of law school in 1990 and spent about 7 years with doing electronic publishing, about another 7 years with IBM in the software hardware business, and then have been in private practice representing a cross-section of clients doing all sorts of interesting things, startup software companies, mergers and acquisitions, musicians, filmmakers. There's it's unusual that I see the same footprint of a client on any given day repeat itself. It's just completely up in the air what we'll be doing day to day.
So you have a really diverse background from a corporate perspective, dealing with a big giant like IBM.
Right, right. So I think it gives our clients the tools and ammunition, so to speak, to craft their deals, negotiate their deals with a fair amount of big corporate experience.
Right, having that corporate or that big business experience with that small town feel.
That's right.
Kind of thing. Okay, great. And Jeff, I know this is an area that a lot of your clients really need to pay attention to. So where's a good place to start in the conversation? I mean, when we look at the list, copyrights, trademarks, patents, all the different types of property, and of course we're going to get into an online discussion as well. Maybe we should just start with just the definition of what is intellectual property. Jeff?
Well, I'll turn it over to Greg in terms of the definition.
Okay.
It's, you know, these two areas, what I do in forming businesses and you know, drafting contracts and things like that, interweaves very tightly with what Greg does in terms of filing trademark applications or enforcing copyrights, enforcing trademarks, internet law, domain name issues, all those kinds of things. And we'll talk a little bit later about the chicken and the egg dilemma we have in terms of what do you do first, form your business or do a trademark.
Okay.
Or search for the trade name and things like that. And we'll talk about how we kind of work together. So I'm gonna let Greg kind of go through the definitions of what is a copyright, what is a trademark, what is a patent, and how they work in terms for a business in terms of what the protections you get.
Well, maybe we can start with one and then just have a conversation, you know, kind of go through in a semi-in-depth. I mean, obviously there's only so much time today, but it is a confusing world for a business owner.
We'll start with trademarks. That's kind of a lot.
That's a great place to start.
That's probably the most common one, I think, that we see with a lot of our clients that come in with a logo or something like that.
Sure.
I want to trademark it.
And a trademark is meant to distinguish goods or services from another. It's a source identifier. So we always treat trademarks as an adjective. And my little trick is when you're thinking about a product for your next, you know, fabulous good or service, it's trademark brand widgets. So in our case, we've got a mark called the Incubation Center. So our trademark is the Incubation Center. So we have the Incubation Center series briefings,
right.
Incubation series in various programs for clients. So we always kind of stick that word brand between the trademark, your proposed trademark, and what it is that you're actually selling to consumers. And it is a much different creature than a trade name. So the trade name is the name of your company. It's something that you typically file with the Secretary of State.
Okay.
But that does not necessarily rise to the level of trademark protection. And that's something that clients don't necessarily think about when they come meet us for that first time.
Yeah, that's a lot of times people will come to me, they will say, I want to form my LLC or my S-Corp. Oh, and I want to trademark this.
Okay.
So right away, I said, why don't you have a talk with Greg
right. And
find out if you've got, and, you know, and Greg will do, you know, his kind of analysis, and he can usually tell, you know, just as quickly as I can tell whether you need to be a limited liability company or an S corporation, he can tell, we'll pretty quickly get a kind of a fair read on whether or not something is going to rise to the level of trademark protection.
And there's a spectrum of distinctiveness that we use when we look at trademarks. Ones that are the most powerful trademarks are things like made-up words. So most people don't know, but Exxon and Kodak were just made-up words.
Okay.
And those rise to the highest level of trademark protection we can get. If you're actually describing the goods or services, for instance, Bar and Grill, that has no trademark protection.
Okay.
So we have things that are terminology that's descriptive that we try to steer clients away from the more, we call it fanciful, arbitrary, or even suggestive. So a suggestive mark is Coppertone for suntan lotion.
Sure.
Or an arbitrary mark is Apple for computers. And those are easier to trademark and to give you much broader protection. And trademark protection is fabulous because it keeps competitors from creating confusion amongst your customer base with similar goods, and it gives you strong federal protection. So if someone infringes your trademark, you're entitled by federal law to go collect their profits for their infringing activities, and you can potentially recover, and I think this is very important, recover attorney's fees.
Right, of course.
And trademark litigation is very expensive.
And, well, and what came to mind as you were mentioning that, Greg, is like the word Kleenex has become somewhat synonymous in our culture as something to use, but it's really a trademark.
It is, and some very interesting trademarks that have become generic over time include aspirin.
Sure.
Escalator, Pilates, they were all trademarks that were lost because they started to become used on a generic basis, and the companies didn't use them in that adjective form. So Xerox is very big at trying to protect Xerox.
Right.
So you don't use Xerox as a verb anymore is the theme of their commercials.
I recall 3M for a long time.
Yeah.
Policed Post-it note. They wanted to call it yellow sticky note as the generic term as opposed to making it everything being Post-it notes.
That's right. So the important part is, one, pick a fabulous trademark, and then two, use it correctly, because trademark protection is potentially perpetual. You have renewal dates, but unlike a patent, which we'll talk about later, a trademark can be an indefinite portion of your IP portfolio that becomes extraordinarily valuable.
Well, and another one that kind of popped into my head was Scotch tape. You know, again, you know, these are just kind of, you don't realize, and I think if there's anything in this process that I'd like to make sure our audience understands is we are now using words in our vocabulary that were trademarked or had a trademark, you know, process, but we actually use them as like you said, Greg, verbs, right?
Right.
You know,
that's right.
I would think that Google is having the same challenge. They're not real happy that we Google thing. We say we're Googling it, but because it turns into a verb.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So we tend to advise clients throughout the life of their commercialization of their products on, we review web content, we review marketing collateral, mailing, that sort of thing, to be sure that they're including the appropriate trademark legends, the little TMs and SMs and
right.
circle Rs that you see. We help clients use those so that their trademark doesn't become aspirin or escalator.
Which is interesting because, you know, it's great that people are saying it, but it kind of loses or I guess, liquidates that, you know,
right.
that process a little bit.
Right,
and
we tend to call that dilution.
Yeah.
And so then it's possible that your buying preferences will shift because of that. You don't feel that strong. If someone wants to buy Nike, they think of quality tennis shoes, quality sporting gear, that sort of thing. And that's the goal of a trademark, is to create that sense of source but also quality so that customers feel empowered when they buy your goods.
Right. That connection, that personal connection
That's
to
right.
your brand. Well, we're going to take a little break here, guys. And when we come back, I want to make sure we continue this conversation, clear up some confusion around the patents theory, and then also copyrights and why that is different. So we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned for more on intellectual property with Greg Proberg and Jeffrey O'Brien from Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. Again, you are listening to Next Stage Business Radio Show. This is Pamela Muldoon, and you're listening to Business 1570. Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm your host, Pamela Muldoon, having a very enlightening and entertaining conversation. Whoever thought that intellectual property could be entertaining, right? With Greg Proberg and Jeffrey O'Brien from Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. Great to have you guys here today.
Yeah, we're just enjoying the copyrighted work by AC/DC.
Did you like that?
Nice.
We actually were talking about this in the car on the way over that, you know, what we can do because we're with a commercial station that pays certain, you know, fees and things like that versus what I could do on the internet or not do or, you know, those kinds of things. So love to have my team of advisors just to make sure I'm doing everything right. And before we went to break, we were talking a lot about the trademark process. And so, Greg, pick up where we left off. You know, let's wrap up this trademark process, but what other forms of intellectual property? I mean, this is a confusing but very important part of the process.
It is. So, again, trademarks are those adjectives that describe goods and services. They can be slogans at times. So we'll see Sony probably do some Super Bowl commercials for its PlayStation, and it does everything trademark that it's pursuing. Trademarks, again, are something that you don't necessarily have to file with the federal government, but there are tremendous benefits if you do. And if you get a federally registered trademark, it can last forever as long as you continue to use that mark. Now, in the world of intellectual property, and keep in mind that most companies these days, 60 to 80% of their assets are technically intellectual property.
Really?
So you've got trademarks, which we talked about.
Yeah.
We've got patents. Patents have their roots in the Constitution that involve something typically like a process, a machine, business methods, games, plants are another example, designs. And patents have what we call a legal monopoly. So for a period of 20 years for most patents, you have the exclusive rights to control that invention. And that's a very powerful, very enforceable tool. So when we talk about patents and when we work with companies who are buying or selling patents or buying and selling companies that own patents, we always do a bit of due diligence to understand what those patent rights are, first and foremost, and how long they last. So if we're looking at a company that's filled with expired patents, that's something that we do as part of our due diligence process.
And this also comes up if we're, you know, have a company that's looking for investors. Investors, the first question they're going to ask is, what's the strength of the patents?
Okay.
You know, because if you have a patent that might expire within a year from an investor coming in or someone purchasing the company, you haven't bought, you didn't get the benefit of your bargain. You aren't buying what you're not getting that monopoly, that continuing monopoly. You're just getting, you know, the tail end of it. So once these things become protectable, it becomes, you know, as part of the due diligence process in my world, we're doing transactions and purchases and sales of businesses, looking at all these things and finding out how protected are they.
Well, and there's really, I'm just thinking in simplistic terms here. So there really are two phases to this. I mean, we see a lot of folks that are in that startup phase where they have a great new idea, and so the patent process there, slightly different process, but still, I mean, extremely important, that great new idea that they have, and there's a lot of mistakes made, correct?
Well, and as we talk about the areas of intellectual property, we have patents, and that actually has to be granted by the government to have a patent, right?
Yep.
We've got trademarks, which is good and service description. We have copyrights, which are things like books, music, dramatic works, paintings, photographs, those sorts of things. Those typically have a very long period of protectability, in most cases 70 years after the death of the author. But what we're talking about in many cases with startups are trade secrets. These are those things that give competitive advantage, have great value, but we have to keep them secret. If we don't keep them secret, anyone can go use them. So,
So
an example of a trade secret is the recipe to Coca-Cola.
Right.
Another famous trade secret is the Colonel's original recipe for KFC.
Okay.
And so they keep all those ingredients and recipes all in different locked vaults.
In a vault somewhere.
That's right.
Deep inside some, probably, under the ground.
and so, much more simplistically for a lot of our clients, they've got a great method in terms of doing business, the way to deal with customer orders or how to do X, Y, and Z via the Internet. And that's a trade secret. And so when we deal with trade secrets, because they don't have a element of federal protection as do patents, copyrights, and trademarks, we often deal with non-disclosure agreements, and we advise clients on how to keep these things secret, because we have to say once the cat's out of the bag, that's it.
And I would think that this is a real issue right now with online, internet, people sharing information so easily that this is a real issue. But you had also, and we're going to actually come back to that discussion in a little bit if that's okay, because we have a whole topic around online that I think needs to be addressed. But let's go back to the transaction. And what's really interesting is the statistic you gave, Greg, that what was it, 60 to 80% of a company's worth is in this process. I mean, that's a staggering statistic. So when you're in that transactional sale, you're going back and, you know, you're looking at what's expired, and then you guys would actually make sure it's all up to speed before the sale can take place, kind of bring the value back up, so to speak.
That's right.
Is that what that means?
That's right. I mean, we might be, you know, our acquisition team might be working on, you know, the deal points or the, you know, the terms of the asset sale. We might bring in Greg as the IP lawyer. We might, you know, we'll get copies of the trademark registrations, we'll get copies of the patent registrations and everything that's been filed, and have him take a look at it and give us his thoughts as to how strong is it, so we can advise our client. You know, there's a period of time in these transactions where you can break the deal and walk away.
Okay.
So that's the period we're going to bring Greg in to look at. We're going to get copies of all this stuff delivered to us and have Greg take a look at it and find out how strong is the protection. Is our client getting what they're proposing to pay for? So it's a good, it's very helpful to have this piece of the team.
And then when we buy the company, we make sure all of the acquired company's goodwill, know-how, all of the things that add value to the core IP come along with the deal. So we end up making sure all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, so to speak.
Well, and what's interesting about this, because intellectual property comes from people's minds, right? I mean, you're dealing with someone's idea or if it's a method, a system, a process. So would it also be safe to say that along with making sure that you've brought the value back up, there's also that making sure it's documented if it's not documented?
That's right.
I mean, I think about some positions I held in some corporate, you know, situations in my previous life before I started my business, and it was always the joke about the hit by the bus theory. All my corporate friends will know what I'm talking about. Like, if we don't write this down, we're not going to know how to do this, right? So how do you guys deal with that when you're dealing with a company that has intellectual property that isn't even documented yet? I mean, how do you get them to do that?
Well, first of all, we get them to talk to Greg.
Right.
You know, we've done it enough, and even though it's his specialty, I know it enough to know when there's an issue.
Okay.
You know, you might see someone with a unique name or the logo or something, and have them, you know, we do kind of an audit to see what protections are available, and then, you know, and then it's up to them if they want to do it. You know, getting them to do it isn't as hard. With the tricky part, you know, back to the transaction stage, if you're going to, one thing I always tell people, encourage them to file for these protections, is they're creating value for their company. They're creating assets. You know, you have a company that might go start out with a good idea that might have a value of zero.
Right.
Now you're talking about, you know, applying for, you have a trademark. You might have two trademarks. You might have some copyright protections. You might have a patent. You know, there's value to those things potentially in the marketplace. So now you've just increased the value of your company by, you know, you have to get a valuation, but who knows how much, simply because you took advantage of those protections that the law allows.
Well, and thinking from a business owner's standpoint, this is now sounding like a pretty insurmountable process. I mean, it can be, right? I mean, you're looking at all the different moving parts. You mentioned the chicken egg situation earlier, Jeff. Like, when do we really start this? How do I pick and choose? And of course, I'm sure it's, you know, dependent on situation, but maybe there's some examples that you can share of how do I pick and choose where I start?
Well, a lot of times, you know, it's, as attorneys, it's, you know, I always use us as like auto mechanics, right? We can diagnose,
right.
And we sometimes can tell on the first interview or the first phone call if there's going to be an issue. And oftentimes Greg and I will meet with the client together because it's this issue of you don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, picking out a name for your company if that's going to be your brand, right?
Right.
You're going to brand your business. If it's one thing if you've got a, you know, if you're a real estate investor and you're naming your company after the street address of your property, if you're going into business and your name is going to be something important, there's a whole series of, you know, you need to, you know, do some research, you know, Google the name. Do some searches on.
He just used it as a verb, didn't he?
Exactly. May even have to pay for a search to find out if someone else is using that name in your area to find out if it's even something that you can brand.
Okay.
And then once you find out that you can, then the next thing is to make sure that nobody else can as well. and as we're forming the company, do the trademark protection.
Well, what I'm hearing is, as you're talking about this, guys, is really it's almost like creating your own checklist of to-dos mm-hmm. that are very specific to your situation,
yep.
right? But we can also make a lot of mistakes when we don't talk to you early on in the process. So we're gonna take a little break here, guys. When we come back, let's talk about those mistakes
sure.
that people make, if that's okay, from agreements to maybe there's a couple of examples of some mistakes that are
sure.
familiar or not so familiar that we could discuss as well.
Sure.
Since, you know, the analogies and stories are the way that we love to learn. So
sure.
we love the fact that we have two guys here talking about intellectual property today, Greg Perlberg and Jeffrey O'Brien from Mansfield, Tenek & Cohen. We're going to be back in just a little bit. Again, you're listening to Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm Pamela Muldoon, excited to be here. Glad you're along for the ride. You're listening to Business 1570. Welcome back to the Next Stage Business Radio Show with Pamela Muldoon here with two of my new best friends, Jeffrey O'Brien and Greg Perlberg from Mansfield, Tenek & Cohen. They're not only going to help me make sure that I've got all my intellectual property covered, but you as well. So before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, we've been kind of joking, Jeff, on social media. Was it copyrights, trademarks, patents, oh my, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. But we make a lot of mistakes as business owners. So, as I like to say, fail forward. Taking a little bit from John Maxwell there. He's probably copyrighted that. So, give us some examples of some of the ways that we as business owners, how can we eliminate some of those mistakes, and what are some of the mistakes we've made?
Sure. Well, one thing is, once you've created something, you know, obviously one mistake is not getting the adequate protections, but to compound that, going out and disclosing that idea or that intellectual property, because it's still intellectual property even if you haven't filed for protections for registration for it, it's still your idea, right?
Right. It could become someone else's intellectual
exactly.
property.
Well,
exactly.
Because we're so excited to tell somebody.
Yes.
We want
right.
somebody else to approve that, yes, it's a great idea or,
right.
you know, get
so,
validation, right?
So, you know, you may have an inventor that comes up with something who, in their eagerness and their idea of seeing that this is going to be the next million-dollar idea, goes out and discloses it to somebody who then takes it and it becomes theirs. Okay?
Right.
So that's part of the problem is not having adequate, you know, registration, in advance, having a patent filed or a trademark registered. More so, it comes into the patent context. Not having a patent for your whatever you've invented, but then compounding it by not have something that we call a non-disclosure agreement.
Okay.
Which is if you're going to have any, even if once you've protected these things, if you're going to talk to another business owner about selling your business, if you're going to talk to maybe having an outside consultant help you with something, okay, or somehow, whatever the transaction may be, maybe seeking investors or whatever, you're going to want to have an agreement that says this is my property and you're going to keep it confidential and you're not going to disclose it.
Okay.
And one of probably the best example I can come up with, there's a movie that just came out last year called Flash of Genius. It's
mm-hmm.
the story of Robert Kern, who invented the intermittent windshield wiper.
Right.
And there was a series of cases where he sued Ford and Chrysler because he claimed they took his idea. Now, he ended up eventually winning millions of dollars because they found that they did infringe on his idea. But the problem, there's a scene in the movie, and as I was watching it, I was almost getting enraged. My wife had to calm me down as I watched it, because he pulls up his car that he's got rigged up with the
right.
invention to the door of Ford Motor Company and demonstrates it. And I'm thinking, if he doesn't have a non-disclosure agreement
right.
in place,
this is a
that's
business attorney's
good.
Nightmare, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can't watch movies anymore. I'm warped. I think of all the legal protections, you know.
Well, I legally downloaded that movie as well
right.
and
yeah,
watched
like...
it before this, and that was I think that's the issue with the trade secret is if someone else can reverse engineer it or figure it out, they can.
Yeah.
Right.
And so if it is a secret, keep it a secret and only discuss it. Be a non-disclosure. There are some specific rules that talk to patentability. If you let the secret out too soon and you were intending to get a patent, you could potentially lose your ability to get a patent. There's some very strong rules worldwide that would impact your ability to enforce your patent in the EU, for instance, which is a tremendous market. And to lose that amount of commerciality is it's just heartbreaking when we see this happen.
Well, and in this particular movie that you're referencing, Jeff, I mean, Ford Motor Company is the Goliath, right? Mm-hmm. And this poor guy was just so excited that he found the answer to the, you know, the solution to the problem. So, of course, you know, it's somewhat of a catch-22, isn't it? I need funding. I need, you know, some money to back up my idea. But if I share it with the world, it could be taken from somebody who already has the ability to do that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, and I always tell clients when they're talking about, you know, they have this invention or they have this idea, right, about having a what we call in parlance, and it's NDA, right, non-disclosure agreement, called NDA. And I always tell a client, you know, it takes us maybe an hour at tops to put together a good form NDA they can use.
Okay.
And I said the cost of that versus what could happen if you don't is just so minimal, it's a no-brainer. It's one of those things, you know, just like forming an entity, right? It's one of those things it defies logic not to do it.
Right.
And so we frequently will give our clients a non-disclosure agreement that they'll use maybe multiple times to make sure that they're protected when they have these discussions. I think a lot of people don't think about it.
Right.
I always say that we attorneys, you know, we have the dark view of human nature and have to think about all the bad stuff. So we're thinking about it all the time that this could happen. And so, you know, go in, you know, protecting your backside. Legally, when you have these discussions about whatever the transaction is.
And it's not just the movie. Jeff and I worked with a client, and we can't share the details, but literally they had a great idea. They put it up on the web, and a 900-pound gorilla copied the idea in a matter of days.
Sure.
And so we're helping our client enforce their rights around this piece of IP.
Well, you know, you mentioned, and we're going to start going into this whole online world here in just a second, guys, but what really kind of struck me as you said that, Greg, was do you find that larger organizations have people surfing the net for this information on a consistent basis and kind of, I mean, how would that big gorilla know? I mean, because they were actively looking for people who were in their competitive market or ideas?
Well, scraping technologies are amazing in terms of what and how you can gather information about your industry. Now, we do the same thing. We often help clients police their intellectual property by helping or by either doing the searches or reminding them to search the internet.
Sure.
It's just become a very powerful tool to, one, see what's happening with your competitors, but it's also a great place to go poach good ideas. And so that's, I think, in this era, having a portfolio of intellectual property that includes patents, which last 20 years, copyrights that last the lifetime plus, trade secrets, which last forever, potentially if you keep them quiet, and trademarks, really creates a strong fence around your company's business.
Well, and we're moving at the speed of light now, so we do need to really take more ownership of this search process. Or, you know, it used to be just simply market research. Now it's idea research, it seems to be, because ideas are, you know, your statistic again just really resonates with me, Greg. So let's talk a little bit. Let's start the discussion about this online challenge. Boy, where do we start? along with just we had Sam Richter on a couple weeks ago, and of course Sam Richter, Take the Cold Out of Cold Calling, talks about the secret web, the quote-unquote secret web, and how we can find some of this stuff. So even if I'm emailing you, Greg, my idea, it's out on the internet, right?
That's right. So I think you start with your employees and your advisors. You have strong policies about how you protect your company's information. You don't post it on forums. You make sure you've got all the pieces in place to essentially vault up your IP, and you build awareness and education as to these risks.
So, and when you say build awareness and education, so it's something that has to be embedded into the culture regardless of size.
That's right.
It's just got to be something that's a part of your entire culture now. I know I used to work in the financial services world, and I was working when HIPAA came out, you know, and all those different changes we had to make with emailing or exchanging information even amongst employees and things like that, because the web is a powerful, powerful place. So once you start with that process, we've also got just simply using the internet as a challenge for ideas, writing, that type of thing. Let's start down that discussion. We're going to take a break here in just a minute, but let's start down that discussion. I know I have a lot of clients who have their ideas are like 100% of their business. You mentioned copyrights for musicians, artists, you know, photographers, different things like that. But what about the writers, the bloggers, the folks that are playing around on social media? Where should we start with this conversation?
It's probably a good place to talk about copyright here. You know, there's a lot of issues that come up with the blogging.
Yeah.
You know, but in terms of the intellectual property issues, you know, you can't go going from one person's site and putting it into another person. I mean, you can't plagiarize someone's writing and call it your own and things like that.
You can and you shouldn't.
Well, you shouldn't. Yeah.
You have the voice of reason sitting here. Yes.
Yeah. But you know, if you're on Facebook and there's a good blog, if I write a good blog post and you want to share it, you don't rewrite it on your own and put it out there. You know, you'll just link to it, right?
We'll just put the link out.
And yeah. I do that on my own blog. If someone wrote a good piece, I'll say, hey, you know, there's a great article and such, click here to read it.
Right.
You know, things like that. You don't basically reproduce it and call it your own work. That's probably one of the most common things that would come about is to not plagiarize somebody else's work online.
Well, we got to take a break here. When we come back, I want to really dive into this conversation in our last few minutes together, guys, because I know a lot of people that are blogging, writing articles. How can I protect this? What are some things I need to be doing or at least considering before I just throw it out there on the web? Does that make sense? All right, so we're going to be back in just a little bit, so listen up for some really interesting conversation on the Internet and how to protect your ideas with Greg Perlberg, Jeffrey O'Brien, Mansell, Tannick, and Cohen. And, of course, you're listening to Next Stage Business Radio Show, Pamela Muldoon on Business 1570. Welcome back to the Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm Pamela Muldoon, talking with Jeffrey O'Brien and Greg Perlberg from Mansell, Tannick, and Cohen on intellectual property, and I you know, I'm listening to Prince here, and I'm just so aware of it right now. But I will say, you know, this is my personal opinion. Not real pleased with the last song you did, but with the whole Vikings thing. But that's a whole other conversation. I know, Jeff, you put it on Facebook. I mean, we're talking internet music and all those different things, and we can put our opinions out there. But this is really not a laughing matter. So, talk to us, Jeff, about some examples like photography. We see a lot of photos out on Facebook, you know, Twitter, and different things.
Yeah, it's funny that you would use a Prince song as a lead into the segment, because if there's any guy that has policed his copyrights anymore, it's probably him. I mean, you can hardly find a trace of him on YouTube because he has everything taken down.
Right.
So. But yeah, you know, this is a big issue for artists. You know, I see Wendy Blomstuff outside in the green room there, and you know, I've got on my Facebook page, my profile picture right now is one that was taken in studio here from Wendy.
Right.
And right on the bottom it says copyrighted in beauty photography. If you know, artists put copyright notices on their works to notify the world that is their work. They are the author of it. You know, you think author, you think of book or magazine article, but an author is a creator of the work, an author of a song, an author of, you know, the creator of a photo. All of that is authorship, and so that is her copyright. I mean, there's absent an agreement from me or my firm to purchase photos from her to use them. You use her copyright on those, on the photos.
And I know I see a lot of other photographers out on, say, we'll just say Facebook, because that's what, you know, we're referring to, and they're not doing that.
No.
So what are the repercussions?
Well, and keep in mind that good-looking picture of Jeff, so there's multiple issues there. So Jeff potentially controls the right of his own publicity, but again, he doesn't own the right to possess those photos.
Right.
And so typically what we will do is, if we are hiring a photographer or hiring a software engineer, we will do what's called a work for hire agreement. That work for hire agreement, when that photo is created or that code written, it's as if I had done it or our company had done it, and we then own the copyright. So there's an issue there now. Now, a very simple thing, and your copyright vests the moment you produce something in tangible media. So that's if you record it, if you put it on the web, if you just think about it, it's not a copyright. So you have to get it down on something.
Okay.
But you know, we will typically provide clients a copyright legend for their website. I think that's great. It puts the world on notice. Now, if you're at risk of copyright infringement, you would actually file your copyright with the U.S. government. There's an online form. It's about $45 to file it electronically, and that's what would give you the ability to recover things like statutory damages and attorney's fees and that sort of thing. So, but we do try to have our clients include their proprietary notices, and a lot of times we want to be good corporate internet citizens. So the spirit of the internet was cross-linking and a big happy community.
Right.
That has changed with some of the commercial elements of the internet. But to the extent our clients want to share some of their information, we include web linking parameters. So you can link to this, but first you have to stop by our homepage.
Okay.
We have them, if they don't want their information copied from their website, we'll help them implement technology controls. And this is similar if you've seen how Google's library works. You can see it, you can scroll it, you just can't copy or print it.
Okay.
So there are both a contractual piece of this, but certainly there are technological elements that can help protect your IP, particularly if you want to get something on the internet. Because you can assume, and we again, this is just within the past 2 weeks, we helped a client who has a website here in the U.S. Someone in another country launched a very similarly sounding website and copied all of our client's content.
Okay.
So now we are going through the process of helping him enforce his copyrights and having that infringing content removed.
And now you mentioned you got to get it down on something, whether if it's, you know, written, it's got to be written down. If it's audio, it's got to be recorded.
That's right.
And before break, we were chatting a little bit. My son, you know, is a musician, and in high school, he had all his music and his band's music up on MySpace. And, you know, we just didn't, is that okay? Is it not okay? Do they own it? Do I own it? Give us some insight into that process.
Well, and it's always important to look at some of the terms and conditions on the sites. Now, MySpace has been a fabulous a venue for new artists. We were talking about Owl City, who's represented by a Minneapolis firm, and how that career was launched based on MySpace. And there are, again, YouTube has rules and restrictions, and they will enforce some of the copyright issues associated with postings on YouTube. Now, it is interesting how they're starting to include commercial elements to YouTube. So if, and I believe it was the wedding clip, if you've seen the...
Yes, who didn't see the JK wedding clip?
And as you watch that now you'll see something scroll across it.
Yep.
With an iTunes link, so you can go download the music that's in the background.
Right.
So there's a lot happening, and particularly in the music space, given the power of the record industry and potentially the greater leverage artists have these days, that we're going to see a lot of changes with the music industry.
Well, in that particular situation, I think it was Chris Brown's song. I mean, he's now kind of resurrected his career after a bad incident a year ago. So they become aware of it, and now they can instead of, I mean, it's great exposure, but they still want to control their music.
Right. And certainly to the extent that music is being shared and copied without any payment to the artist, can be frustrating when we represent artists, because that's the way they get paid.
Right.
Is they may make 10 cents on that dollar download. So we do, you know, we're a strong artist advocate in terms of getting our artists paid.
Well, and like we talked about at the very beginning, I mean, these are the creative people. We love what we do, so it's a challenge. You're asking us to bring out that left brain and you know, protect our passion. We've heard all sorts of stories all through the years, from the Beatles to the Rolling Stones to, you know, just all those tragedy stories, and yet there's some great, you know, win stories as well. So give us a last couple of tips or two on, you know, where should we start? You guys have the incubation centers over there at Mansfield Tannick. Talk a little bit about that as well.
Well, I always say we take the kind of the fear out of meeting with an attorney through our incubation center program, where we have, you get initial consult with us at no cost, and oftentimes they'll meet with both of us. They'll meet with Greg and I to talk about not only should I be an LLC or an S corporation,
right,
but also these issues. Okay, I'm doing a business that's going to be online. Immediately, I know Greg needs to be in meeting with that client to find out what the protections are available, or the client will ask themselves. You know, we tend to represent a number of savvy clients that know coming in that they have an issue that they need to talk to somebody with. So we do that. We're pretty easy on the fees for a couple of years during an incubation period to try to get them up and running, because you know it, it's a win-win, right? If we have a client that comes in with a great idea and we get it protected right and get their business up and running, you know, we could have a good steady client for 10, 15, 20 years.
Sure.
And then being able to deal with these issues when we help them sell their business.
Right, so, right. Excellent.
I think the other advice is clear everything that you use. If you're grabbing photographs, if you're grabbing other materials, there are companies out there that go and police the use of these, and they will come after you. So it's one of those things that, you know, a lot of clients, should I clear this? The answer is usually yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I do the marketing materials for our firm, and any photo other than the images of the attorneys themselves, we purchase those from, you know, through companies to use those.
Well, and we didn't even get into that, but the whole stock photo thing on the internet and the graphic design, and I mean, it is seriously an extremely diverse topic, and I don't know about you guys, but I'd love to have even more conversation about this, maybe as another, you know, kind of a part two.
Absolutely.
And continue and maybe get some feedback from our listeners as well and things that they're interested in, because I know graphic design, that's pulling them off the internet or not, or, you know, there's just so many different things. But I really appreciate you guys coming in and spending so much time on intellectual property today. Greg, thank you so much for joining Jeff. Great to have you in studio. And so Greg Proberg, Jeffrey O'Brien, Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen, they have the Incubation Center. We're going to be back with Hour 2 in just a little bit, and we're going to be having a great conversation with Bruce Newstead, president of the Twin West Chamber. So stick around, because we have another hour to go, and we're really excited to be here. Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right, you're listening to Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm Pamela Muldoon, and this is Business 1570.